just like Dr. Smith kind of set up the ester cycle and the hormones that go along with it, what I'm going to try to do is introduce you to the management that then affects your conception rates. And so there's a lot of things that I'll be talking about that I either have one slide on or one bullet point on that when you look through the rest of the program, there'll be entire talks about. And so think about this as how things are getting set up and how important the management is that affects them. And when we look about the importance of reproduction, and I like to point out in our cow-calf management class, why is reproduction so important? Well, if you look, not only is the number one reason cows are getting culled from the herd, reproduction, it's also the number four reason. And so when you look at that list from the NOMS data of why cows leave our beef cow herd, reproduction actually appears on there twice. And so by far, we can see how important it is for the longevity of a herd. And was able to work with the USDA station in Clay Center, Nebraska a few years ago, and we recently published some data that we were actually looking at over 16,000 individual heifers that conceived as a heifer. And how long do they stay in the herd? And if you look at this, we were able to break them apart by animals that conceived early and calved early their first breeding season, the middle 21 days or the last 21 days. And if you look at that, not only do those heifers that conceive early their first year, and this was called down only animals that conceive their first year, so we got any infertility issues out of the study. Not only do they stay in the herd longer, but when we looked at their weaning weights, the first year here, this was expected because these calve 21 days before these and these 21 days before these. But when we look at that through their first six calves, or first six calves here, we see an increase in weaning weight. So not only are we getting those heifers to stay in a herd longer, but we're also getting more pounds of calf produced from them. So I want to set this up in kind of three different areas. One is, what's important before you start a synchronization program? What's important while you're doing it? And then what's important after you breed an animal? And so when we start with heifers, what criteria should they meet? What has your pregnancy rates been? And not only what has the overall pregnancy rates been, but when you look at your calving distribution, are you getting your heifers bred early? If you're getting your heifers bred early and good conception rates, they're ideal situations to actually go into a synchronization and AI protocol. Have your heifers received growth implants? This is important because there are some growth implants that can actually affect uterine gland development and actually hurt conception rates. So the recommendation is to not use growth implants in heifers that you're going to keep for replacements. What's target weight? The recommendation for years has been target weight of 65% of mature weight. And there's other data, and Dr. Funston will probably present some, where you can develop heifers to young or lighter target weights and still get good breeding season pregnancy rates. Some recent work out of the USDA station in Nebraska shows that puberty is reached in heifers somewhere between 50 and 55% of mature weight. When the target weight of 65% was developed, the goal was to have 95% or more heifers that had reached puberty at the start of the breeding season. And so there is a factor in there that allows the majority of heifers to get or to be cycling before the breeding season. And that brings us to the last one on what is their reproductive tract score, or what is their pubertal status. And if you look at the reproductive tract scoring system, a tract score of 4 or 5 means a heifer has reached puberty. In the multi-state projects we've been involved with, and any time we look at heifer development, one of the biggest factors that affects AI conception rates in heifers is whether they reach puberty prior to the breeding season. So what is puberty? Well, in heifers, it's really easy. It's the first time they ovulate, the first time they're able to breed. Can you go out and look at heifers and know whether they're pubertal? Not unless you're watching them every day and you see whether they come into estrus or not. And so when you look at that and what is the variation in it, and I just pulled out two papers here that had large groups of heifers in them, and when you looked at the herds they worked with, puberty rates from 19% to 100% had reached puberty at the start of the breeding season. Our own herds on campus or in the university system, we pull blood samples on every year to look at puberty status prior to the breeding season. We see that exact same range, just in the year-to-year variations from it. So if you know what your status is, it's very important. If you look at this data, it was published a couple of years ago, the relationship between reproductive tract score and heifer performance. We can see tract score 4s and 5s have much better AI conception rates, pregnancy rates, calving days, so they calve earlier, but then they also were better their second year. And so just like we showed, those heifers that conceive and breed early actually stay in the herd longer, have a better chance to conceive and breed subsequent years. Now, one of the questions I often get asked about, and I was able to work with our vet science department a couple of years ago, is vaccinating our heifers. And there'll be an entire talk talking about vaccines. But do you know the vaccination history of your heifers? We want to vaccinate replacement heifers early, usually prior to weaning and at weaning, to get them, start building that immunity and get them some immune system built before the breeding season. When we're talking about pre-breeding vaccination, we want to do it at least 30 days prior to the breeding season. And I really stress it to producers that if you do not know the vaccination history, if you did not give that injection yourself, do you really know what they received? And a prime example is that our vet science department a couple of years ago got in a group of samples, actually aborted fetuses, from an individual that gave a modified live to a group of heifers that he had been told, oh, they were vaccinated pre-breeding. So he went through at preg check time, gave them a modified live, and aborted 100 heifers. And so it's a prime example. If you're not positive what they were given, you need to err on the cautious side. If you have naive heifers, and a study we did a few years ago actually showed this, you want to stay away from modified lives at the start of the breeding season. If they're well vaccinated, the data shows that there's not as big of an effect, but if an animal has not been previously vaccinated, when we vaccinated animals that were naive with a modified live at the start of the breeding season, not only did it affect the conception rates to the timed AI, but to the subsequent cycle also. And so it's very important to stay away from naive animals, to get them vaccinated early as you're developing them. So what criteria is there for cows? Kind of the same thing. What has your pregnancy rates been? When are they calving? The best benchmark data I know would show that somewhere between 50 and 60% of your cows should calve in about the first 30 days of the calving season. And so if you're in those ballpark ranges, those cows are a good situation to actually go into a synchronization and AI program. What's the body condition score at calving? Body condition score at calving kind of tells you what their body reserves are when they calve, what they can put into lactation and still get ready to cycle and breed in the subsequent breeding season. What's the body condition score now? Depending on when you collect this, if this is prior to calving, it gives you a chance to put condition on the animals if they need it. If it's after calving, are they losing too much condition? Are they negative where they're not going to cycle back early? How many days postpartum? So when we think about that calf coming out of a cow, when we take virgin heifers, her uterus will fit in the palm of your hand. Well, now she just had a 80 to 100 pound calf. We've got to get that uterus back down to that pre-breeding size to get good fertility. And so the studies have shown it's nothing to do with fertilization, but during that involution period, it actually inhibits sperm transport. And so we need cows at least 30 days to get through that uterine involution to get them ready for the breeding season. What's the current length of your breeding season? That goes back to that distribution of calving, because if your cows are calving in a very short period of time, you can synchronize them as a group. If you're over a 60, 80-day calving season, you may have to split your herd into smaller groups to synchronize to be able to group them together on when to breed. And then back again, just like in heifers, what proportion are cycling at the start of the breeding season? Why is that important? Animals that aren't cycling can't get bread. If they're not cycling, just like Dr. Smith pointed out, they're not having ovulations, and there's no way for them to conceive. So when we talk about the postpartum period in cows, typically we're talking 35 to 60 days, but there's a lot of factors that can affect that, and it's one of the biggest problems we face, and that's where some of our synchronization protocols that can help us jumpstart the cyclicity period have had tremendous benefits. When we look at those factors that really affect the anestrous period, you see several things we'll talk about more throughout this program. Nutrition, age, suckling status, dystocia, bull presence, all can affect that postpartum interval. And here's just a graph that demonstrates that. Body condition score at calving on calving intervals. And we see when we're in a body condition score 5, which is the usual recommendation, we see about a yearly calving interval. We get down below a body condition 4, and you see how much that interval extends out because those cows don't have the body reserves to initiate cyclicity and get bred early and post-calving. And a graph that several of you have probably seen before, it's been used a lot on why is that important. Reproduction ranks very low when it comes to nutrition. And so when we start feeding an animal, we've got to fill all of these things else up. Maintenance, skeleton growth, lactation, before we finally get to reproduction. So we have to meet all of those other requirements before the body says, hey, I can reproduce. If she's losing weight, if she's losing condition, her body is going to say, there's not enough nutrition for me to actually conceive and carry a calf. Age, the recommendation is breed young cows, heifers, prior to the mature cows. Why? Just like the last graph, they're still growing, they're still maturing. They use those nutrients first, and it takes a longer period for them to cycle back. So we need to get those young cows that chance to breed back a longer period before we breed back to be able to let them stay calving early with the mature cow herd. Suckling stimulus. And I know y'all are, the weather says you're coming out of a drought. It depends on where you are. I grew up about 6 hours south of here, and they're still in a drought. Suckling stimulus can be very important on things. When a cow is being suckled by her calf, it's actually going to extend the postpartum period. We've worked with producers that in thinner body conditions, shorter postpartum intervals, drought situations where there's not enough feed to get that extra body condition on them, you can early wean or partial wean to help those cows cycle. And so knowing those things, is it a fun thing to do? No. But is it something that you can do to help your conception rates? Definitely. How many of you think about your calving affecting when your cows cycle back? Well, if we look at stage 2 labor, which is when the water bag first appears until that calf is delivered, some work that was done up at Miles City showed if a heifer goes longer than 60 minutes or a cow longer than 30 minutes, we actually extend that postpartum interval. Just from the stress of calving delays them until when they cycle back. Presence of a bull. How many of you use Gomer bulls? See a few people. They're still very common. You realize that bull actually can help cows cycle. And I was visiting with a bunch of producers one time that were all breeding by natural service, and I was there, think about this. When you turn your bull out, what does your calving distribution look like? And they get this big peak of calves about 10 to 15 days after what would be calculated as the start of the breeding season. And if you look at the literature that's been done on it, it takes about 10 to 20 days for that bull exposure to get these cows cycling. And so we can see benefits that way. Now, another thing you need to do prior to the breeding season is decide what you're going to synchronize them with. Dr. Patterson's going to talk a lot about the different protocols. They're in all the AI catalogs. They're published lots of places. The reason you have to decide beforehand is depending on which one you pick, You may be deciding things anywhere from 10 days before you start breeding them to more than 30 days. But the biggest thing with the synchronization protocol is the compliance with it. There's a lot of work put into these protocols. Are you following what's there? With timing, with the correct injections, all of those things will affect your conception rates. Something else to think about prior to the breeding season is, who are you going to breed to? And I'm not going to stand up here and tell you who's the best bull or anything like that, but you need to decide what your goals are. What's the composition of your herd? Are you keeping replacement heifers? Are you a terminal or a totally terminal herd? How do you sell your calves? Are you looking for growth to weaning? Are you retaining ownership to look at carcass? Those are all decisions you have to make, and you have to be proactive about it. You need to make these decisions and decide where you're going. You need to understand the EPDs and indexes to select the best bulls. And by knowing this, you know what to look for, and you need to pick those decisions and go with them. And some of the herds I see that have some of the biggest problems are ones that bounce around. Oh, this year I'm going to breed for growth. Oh, next year I'm going to breed for carcass. What is making you money? So if we get these heifers developed right, we get cows with a long postpartum interval, what do we do at the start of a breeding season? Dr. Smith talked a little bit about this estrus detection. I could talk all day on estrus detection, on the role that estrus and that preovulatory estrogen is playing in sperm transport and preparing the uterus and embryo survival. The important thing is, we need cows in estrus to get them to conceive. There's several estrus detection aids out there. I've seen lots of things used. They do a great job telling you when a cow is in estrus. There is nobody I know of, and I probably spend as much time as anybody out watching cows. There are times of the day you can't be out there. These aids are benefits to helping you get more of them in estrus. And why is that important? Dr. Smith pointed out pregnancy rate is synchronization rate times conception rate. This study was done at Colorado State. Same herd comparing intensive versus casual heat detection. Casual was 30 minutes morning and evening. Intensive was the heat watch system, so it was computerized 24 hours a day. There's a 30% difference in what they detected in estrus over a three-day period. When you looked at the conception rates to those animals, there's another 20% difference. Why is that? If you just go out there morning and evening and you have no help, do you know when those cows are showing estrus? If we multiply those across, synchronization rate times conception rate gives us pregnancy rate, and everybody is thrilled with a 70%, and everybody blames the protocol at a 35%, and these cows were done the same way. And it goes back to how well you detect estrus. Why does knowing when they show estrus important? Dr. Smith told you ovulation's about 30 hours after the onset of estrus. Some work out of Dr. Sackey's lab shows the AI compromise at about 12 hours. If we breed too early, the sperm starts to die, so we get low fertilization rate but high embryo quality. If we breed late, we get high fertilization rates but poor embryo quality because the oocyte starts to die. And so we have that compromise of breeding about 12 hours after the onset of estrus. So then the question becomes, when do cows show estrus? Well, there's over 500 animals up here under continuous observation. And if we look at it, over half of them are in the evening hours. That's the time where the aids are a true benefit to you, is when you can't be out there. And believe me, I've tried to heat detect Angus-based cows in the dark. It's very hard to do. And they don't like you walking around with a flashlight, so it does get to be difficult. And that's where the aids really benefit you, because they tell you what came into estrus when you can't be out there seeing them. So what about fixed-time AI? Is estrus detection important with fixed-time AI? Actually, it is. We don't do a study anymore that we don't detect estrus even with fixed-time AI. One of my graduate students, we just finished analyzing over 10,000 animals, and I don't have it broken apart on here, But these top few are the COSINC protocol, the 5-day CEDAR, the PG 6-day CEDAR, the 7-day CEDAR, and the 14-day CEDAR. And if you look down at those, it's consistent across all of them. The animals that show estrus have better conception rates. And when you look at the entire model with over 10,000 head, it's about a 27% improvement. And so when I said I could talk all day about the benefits of that cow showing estrus to all of these different things in the body, you see it even with your fixed time AI protocols. And when I talked about the compliance with the protocols, those timings are set to when the majority of the animals should be in estrus. I had a call this spring from one of the producers we work with quite a bit, had 300 cows synchronized for a timed AI. He went out to do the timed AI, had patches on them to see how many were in estrus, because I like to think of it as a cheap insurance policy. If you go out to do a timed AI and most of them are activated, everything is great to go. He had 3 cows out of 300 that had shown estrus. He called me that morning. We actually pulled the plug on doing a timed AI. He heat detected for the next 5 days. He got about 50% of them in estrus over the next 5 days, and then we were able to start over on the other group. Have no idea what actually happened to the group. The conception rates on that 50% based off of estrus detection had done well, and then he was able to redo the other ones. And so one of the things is it's helping avoid some of the wrecks that may occur for reasons we can't determine. Something else at time of AI, inseminator efficiency. We know from the literature if we see a cow in estrus, we put semen in the correct place, we get fertilization about 95% of the time. So the correct location becomes very important. Getting through the cervix, depositing semen, right in the body of the uterus. And when you put it in the body of the uterus, you'll get semen that moves into both horns. Now what about depositing it in the wrong place? We know if we put semen in the cervix versus in the uterine body, there's at least a 10% decrease in conception rates. Study looked at it a few years ago where they actually killed some animals and they saw this happening at least 20% of the time. And so making sure you're confident of where that semen goes, having a professional help you with it that is good at it, can help those conception rates. Get asked the question when we teach AI schools about, well, what if I go too deep? The studies when they were first starting with sex semen showed depositing semen in one horn. What happened when they deposited it in the wrong horn? There was actually no... It did not hurt conception rates because that semen will move throughout the entire tract. The problem with going into the horns is if you scratch that endometrium and you get any blood into the uterus, you will hurt conception rates. So the best thing to do is in the uterine body without having to manipulate the tract too much to keep from getting any immune response. So what about... I've done everything right. I've got them developed correctly. I'm long enough postpartum. I've looked at all of my stuff at time of breeding. I've got cows in estrus. Everything's done, correct? Well, what about after AI? I said when we get semen in there, we get fertilization about 95% of the time. I know nobody who gets 95% conception rates. So we're really talking about embryonic loss. And it does occur, and there's several factors that can affect it. Genetics, heat stress, synchrony between the embryo and the uterus, sire, nutrition, shipping stress, all of these become important on embryonic loss. And to understand embryonic loss, I want to briefly take you through that embryo development. So if we start day 0 is when they're in estrus, day 1 is when they get fertilized, then we start seeing their cell divisions, the 8-cell stage, the embryo migrates to the uterus about day 5 to 6. Blastocyst formation 7 to 8. Hatching day 9 to 11. One of them I want to point out is maternal recognition of pregnancy, day 15 to 17. She doesn't even know she's pregnant until 2 weeks after you breed her. So I tell people, what's the easiest thing for you to lose? Something you didn't know you had. And so any changes that are occurring in these first 2 weeks that you stress that animal, she can lose that embryo and she never even knew she had it. It's not down here until about day 42 when we have good attachment to the uterus that embryo is pulling the nutrients it needs. Before this, it's living totally off of secretions. And so we run into shipping stress. Do we stress animals by shipping them? Yes. If we ship them early when that embryo is in the oviduct and compare that to shipping them before maternal recognition of pregnancy, about the time of attachment or later, we can see we can stress those animals and actually lose pregnancies. And so if you're going to truck cattle at distance, it's important to do that as soon as you can after UAI. But what about other management? How many of you think what you do to a calf at weaning can affect how you should manage her after you breed? Believe it or not, at weaning is when that animal actually learns to eat. Before that, it's been totally dependent on its mother. Yes, it eats some, it grazes some, it's learned things. But when you remove that, it totally has to learn how to survive by itself. And so this is the time when animals learn grazing skills. And that's our benefit to the beef industry, is we can take that poor grass that's out there that other protein sources can't consume, and we can utilize it and turn it into beef. And so during that first year of life, that calf's willingness to try new things decreases. And so this learning they does actually builds their ability to survive in the environment they're going into later on in life. And when you introduce them to something new after that, what they do is they take little bitty bites to see what they're interested in, if it'll hurt them or not, and they can actually spend more energy foraging and ingesting less food and actually go through negative weight. And so we were looking several years ago at actually how do we affect heifer development? Is there a cheaper way to do it? So we took one of our research herds and split it in half. And half of them stayed in the feedlot as they always had, and half of them we kicked out to range throughout the winter. Now we supplemented them, and you can see our average daily gains. We did pretty good estimating in that. What surprised me, and the bottom's cut off here, but this is May to June. This is when our grass greened up, and all of the heifers were turned out to one pasture together. And look at this difference in weight gain. These that had been in the feedlot crashed for the next month. Well, we happened to bring them in. We wanted to see what was going on. So a week after we turned them out, we brought them back in. And if you look, these heifers that had been out or been in the feedlot that got turned out to grass lost 3 pounds a day for that first week. And what's interesting is a study that was done here in Oklahoma was the only one I could find that animals had lost that much. And they took heifers from 120% of maintenance to 40% of maintenance. It caused them to lose 4 pounds a day, but 60% of them stopped cycling. Well, you got to thinking, if you can stress them enough that quick to make them stop cycling, what's that doing to pregnancies? So we actually did this over about a 5-year period where we took animals, developed them those two ways. At AI, they went out to pasture together. And one consistent thing across it is we can see year-to-year variation based on our forage quality and how much grass we had. We were in a pretty good drought this year. You can see those animals that had experience always outperformed those that didn't. But what happened to pregnancy rates? Even though no difference in cyclicity, so we had great cycling rate, we see a 10% improvement to those that had grazing experience. So a 10% loss from those when they got turned out to grass and didn't have that experience. So then the question was, well, how can we fix this? Is there any way we can? So we worked with several producers, took heifers that had been developed in a dry lot situation at AI, we moved them out to pasture, or we supplemented them and we moved them out to pasture. We took forage clippings. We actually put the group that went to pasture by themselves on the better pasture. And then we supplemented the other group, with just enough energy that if they just ate a little bit, they should not be in a negative energy balance. What happened to conception rates? We were able to bring them back. So we actually had a 15% improvement in those that were supplemented. So the question becomes, what's going on? Why are these animals losing so much weight? So we actually took a group of heifers that had all been developed together, turned one out to pasture for 44 days, kept the other group in a feedlot, and then turned them out after that experience. Is 44 days enough? Well, what we did is here's the weight changes. So we can see the group that was turned out early, they had low average daily gains when we turned them out for those first 9 days. Then they caught back up. This group that spent an extra 45 days in the feedlot, when we turned them out, we see a drop in them. So what's causing this? They're out there on good grass. Well, we actually put pedometers on the animals. How much were they walking? When they were in a feedlot, they walked about 2,500 steps a day on average. These were up about 6,000. Well, what happened when we turned this group out to grass? They went from walking 2,500 steps a day to walking over 16,000. It's like sitting on your couch all winter and then going and running a marathon. And these pedometers actually record how long the animal's standing and how long they're laying down. No difference in amount of time standing. So they're walking this much more in the same amount of time. So then you tell me, how much are they actually eating? It took about 5 days. You see, these first 4 days are different. It was out here the fifth day before they actually settled down and was behaving similar to the other group. So do you think 5 days can affect your embryo? We put heifers in a feedlot and wanted to see if that short of a period could actually affect it. Remember, that embryo is still in the oviduct. So we had heifers being developed normally. We synchronized at time of AI. They either continued on their normal plan of nutrition, or we cut them back to 80% or less of their nutrition. Then we flushed embryos on day six to look at that embryo quality. How many cells were there? What stage was it at? And if you look, no difference in embryo recovery rates. So similar number of them got bred, and we were able to collect the embryos. Embryo stage, we see these about a stage further along, and they're the exact same age. So a day six embryo, a 4.6 versus a 3.8. Embryo quality, a 2 versus a 2.8. So any of you work with embryo transfer, most companies won't transfer a stage 3 embryo. And so we have a more developed, better quality embryo. No difference in accessory sperm, no difference in number of dead cells. But if we look at total number of cells, as you'd expect, these were further along. They had more cells. They had a higher percent alive. So 6 day effect after you AI'd them actually affecting that embryo. And so when's the best time to truck an animal within those first 5 days? When's the worst time to change the diet on an animal? That same time. So I get asked the question, how do we compromise this? How do we do this? We have producers developing in feedlot, developing on range, everything under the sun, what works in their system. And the best thing I can tell them is consistency. We don't want to stress that animal around the time of AI. Anything we can do to keep consistent nutrition, consistent, get rid of any stress changes at time of AI gives us the best conception rates. And so then with my extension appointment, I get this call a lot. What went wrong? And so what the mindset I go through is the equation of reproduction. Four simple factors that if you listen for the next 2 days, you will see a lot of talks fall into these areas. Animals detected in estrus and inseminated, inseminator efficiency, fertility level of the herd, fertility level of the semen. If we put all of those as a percentage, if we do everything perfect, they all get bred. But I was teaching in our cow-calf management class last week, and they informed me it only takes a 60 to pass the class. When I did the math, I didn't even want to show you that one, so I put it one grade higher. Let's say we're making a C in it instead of a D. You get 24% of your cows pregnant. So as you're thinking and listening to talks the next 2 days, think about where they fall into these and how you can improve things. When we actually do figure out problems, some of the primary areas that come into play, people not starting with good candidates for AI, not cycling, not good body condition, not far enough postpartum, not reaching puberty, protocol compliance, actually following what the protocol says, facilities, if you decide to do a timed AI, do you have the facilities to handle the number of cows you need to work? Shipping stress, weight loss, avoiding those nutritional stresses, and the biggest one, failing to pay attention to details. Reproduction, you can never do better than your worst event, and so those details all have a tremendous impact. One of the things we have ruled out a lot of times is actually the products. If they're handled correctly, the products have good efficacy. So when we think about fertility, and as you listen to talks the next 2 days, think about all the management. And every one of you have probably heard fertility is lowly heritable. And I like to point out to people that's because so much of fertility is management. Think about, as you listen to all these talks, what you're doing right and what can help out your conception rates. And so with that, during the breaks this evening, I'm happy to visit with you, answer any questions. And a friend of mine from Louisiana told me this is how they're breeding snapping turtles now. So.